Good afternoon. My name is Jay, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Advocacy Practitioners Sharing Session conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during that time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw a question, please press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to introduce Mr. Stephen Abram, Executive Director of the Federation of Ontario Public Libraries. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Jay, and welcome everyone to our, oh my God, I've forgotten. This is our third or fourth session in the Advocacy and Influence Training Series, our series of conversations and teleconferences and webinars. And I'm really looking forward to talking to Ken Roberts today. I just want to remind you all that we are recording this session. If you like it, you can share it with your trustees or staff, and which might be helpful for some of you. And now I'm going to introduce Ken. Ken is, I guess I'm going to call him president of Ken Roberts Library Consulting. Ken's been an expert in tracking trends that are likely to have an impact on the future of public libraries. He helps libraries to anticipate future customer needs and align their resources. But he probably needs less of an introduction. We all know that Ken was president of the Ontario Library Association. He's received the CLA Outstanding Service to Librarianship Award and the Ontario Public Library Association's Lifetime Achievement Award. He's a member of McMaster University's Alumni Gallery. But also, which I think is one of the more interesting parts of his history, he's a critically recognized children's novelist and very well respected in that field with his illustrators and as an author of little novels that engage kids. For many years, Ken was CEO of Hamilton Public Library and CIO of the City of Hamilton, which is sort of a dream job to be to have all those things in your own bailiwick. But he was able to do some amazing work influencing the economic and engagement success of the City of Hamilton integrated with the library. He's had good success in engaging municipal leaders and his community. And he's also been involved in mentoring mid-career librarians through the Northern Exposure to Leadership Institute. I consider Ken a great friend, a great librarian, and a great leader. His presentations are educational and inspiring, and we're lucky to have some time to talk to him today. We're going to do a simple interview format. I'm going to ask Ken some questions for half an hour, 40 minutes, and then I'd like you all to think up what you're thinking of, either things that we either might spark ideas and questions on or comments, or things you'd like to ask Ken. And we'll open it up to questions, and Jay, our teleconference technical host, will introduce you, and then you can ask your question. I'm just going to get right into it because I know this conversation is going to go quite easily because Ken's easy to talk to, and when I'm talking to people smarter than myself, it's one of my favorite things to do in the world. So I'm going to start by asking Ken about his philosophy. And I think all great leaders have a philosophy of what they care about. So I'd like to ask him about his philosophy for advocating for the library. So, Ken, what's your philosophy?
Oh, and by the way, you know, Stephen, I should mention that I'm driving a car hands-free at the same time. So if you suddenly hear me be distracted, hopefully it's not age kicking in. It's a stoplight or I have to pay attention to something.
Okay.
Philosophy, I guess, in terms of advocacy or city leaders, is never whine. I think there is a tendency for libraries to talk about, well, we're good, so we should receive our funding. But hopefully everything that a municipality does, and that is where we get most of our funding, hopefully everything a municipality does is good. So I think that we have to make sure that we're not in competition with the other programs, that we're paying attention to some of the city or the town or municipality strategic directions and needs, and that we're fitting within those and talking about our value and what we add to citizens instead of just a generalized we're good. We have to also get away from talking about numbers and talk about impacts. I saw one in the States that very recently where they were saying they weren't going to do a strategic plan, they were going to do an impact plan. And I thought that was fantastic, actually.
Well, that's really interesting, because that puts you right into the measurement space and out of the statistics space.
Yeah.
What a great way of reframing it. So there's a couple of things that influence in libraries about. One is dealing with our community. Then there's politicians and council. There's helping support our trustees to help lead us and contribute value. So I'm going to start with community responses. When the community gives you feedback, how do you frame that? How do you receive the feedback, but also create the opportunity for influence?
Well, I think one thing that libraries suffer from a little bit in terms of feedback is that people like what they have had. So it's very difficult for you, and when we talk about change and change management, the people actually that we serve, many of the customers that come through our doors are the ones that want us to change the least. They have a nostalgic view of libraries. If you look in fact, at many of the community surveys, then you'll actually see that there's around an 80% feeling that the library is important, that the library is good, that the library provides value, even though only about 50% of the people actually have library cards. So there's a 30% gap in there of people who think you're good but don't use you at all. But they think of you in terms of the old-fashioned library, the way it used to be. And I think that one of the unfortunate things is that that sometimes inhibits libraries from being able to progress. We pay more attention to the people that are in front of us telling us we want to stay the same instead of the people who are no longer coming through the doors or who are beginning to use other different types of medium. I can give you an example. We know from the future of publishing and what a lot of publishers are saying, new authors have lost money for a long time, so they're going to start looking at not producing those new authors in print, just electronically. Literary fiction has lost publishers money for a long time. Again, they're looking at saying, we'll just produce them electronically, not in print, and hope that they find a market. They're also talking about doing the same thing with reprints. So that means that many of our traditional users who like new authors, who like literary fiction, who like nonfiction, because it's going electronic quite quickly, who want to read some of, once they've discovered an author, they want to read past works by that author. These people are going to have to adopt electronic means of receiving their material.
That's interesting, because I think that that phrase nostalgic view of libraries is one of our key influencing activities, especially with our communities, but sometimes with politicians and trustees.
Well, I think it's something that we've worked positive, that's worked in our favor for a long time, but it could start working against us because that nostalgic view, oh, we don't need that anymore. We used to need that. If you look at the workforce statistics, they actually say that within 5 years, half the workforce will be under 35 years of age. So we're going to start hitting that age group that never really used us, went into a library for school assignments. And their nostalgic view of the libraries won't exist. So we have to think of other reasons why we are demonstrating to them that we're providing value.
So what are the ways one would demonstrate that?
Well, I think that if we look at almost every study that's been done since the mid-1990s and computers started being used quite a bit in libraries, that almost every one of them, when you ask people what they think of when they talk about libraries, they say books, and then they say books again, and they even wonder sometimes why you're in the technology business. And so we've never really managed to change the perception of libraries very much. I'm a big proponent that one of the things we need to do is make sure that every library has a huge street presence, lots of big windows, things that people see as they drive past. And we need to make sure that in those windows we're putting the technology, we're putting school kids that are studying, we're putting people using their portable devices and tablets, using the library's Wi-Fi. So we're putting those functions in the front windows so that everybody driving past sees what's going on inside the library and it starts changing their image of what it is. Even libraries I sometimes see that have good street presence, too frequently what you're seeing is a row of books. And you're feeding that perception of what a library really was.
So when so suppose you don't have the opportunity to do what you did in Hamilton and rip off the front of your library and create that great window. How do you get outside of the walls of the library and change that activity? I know you've done some even when you're doing your budget ask at City Council.
Yeah.
You've been known to bring in a teen or a senior or a video to tell the story.
Well, I think that one of the main things you can do is that you need to pay attention to what are the strategic partnerships within the city and make sure you're sitting at the table. And it's almost like the academic community talks a lot about the embedded librarian who is working with the individual departments. Well, we were doing the same thing in Hamilton. If there was a city initiative that dealt with, public health or that dealt with downtown homelessness types of issues, then we tried to make sure there's a librarian assigned to that particular issue that could do the research, the background, produce lots of the reading reports and information, make sure that city staff have lots of the access to the databases, because there's some great stuff inside those databases for city halls. You know, you have lots of stuff on human resources, on waste management, on roads, on IT, on almost every issue that the city actually has. So we used to produce a list of some of the periodicals and publications that they could access through the library so that they knew they could get that material.
Well, that's cool. But, you know, how do you build, like, it's one thing to send out a list. How do you build relationships beyond the budget chief and the mayor? How do you get deeper into your, for instance, municipal organization?
Well, one thing I think is that you have to make sure that everybody in the library itself, and even a small library, large library, is that type of an ambassador, and that it's not just the one single person, the CEO of the library system, that's doing that type of work. It has to be you can actually make sure that there are a number of different people, depending on how large your library is and how large the municipality. That's going to change and vary, but you have to make sure that that workload is shared amongst a number of people and that they have the authority and the responsibility to sort of sit at those tables and help make decisions.
Now, on your personal level, I know golf can, or that kind of stuff can make a difference. So, like, you've been able to change the course of e-book history in Canada because of a golf game with the president of a major publisher, or you know, to initiate a discussion that was more fruitful. Do you find that that social stuff, like golf, social events, having a coffee or a drink with the police chief or the fire chief or that sort of stuff is useful, or is it a frill?
I don't think anybody should take up golf in order to, do that. But if you use golf as the example, that doesn't mean that everyone that you're trying to have a relationship with plays golf necessarily. I think it's partly, I just like people. I think you have to learn to listen. I mean, the one advantage we have as librarians is we're very used to doing the reference interview, where you're actually asking the person what they mean. You know, you came in for this particular item, and you're making sure, even as you're beginning to help them, you're making sure that's really what they need. You're sort of taking that and then interpreting it in your mind in terms of the resource that you actually have. That reference interview is really good when you talk to members of the community or when you talk to members of the council or members of the town staff. That same process of asking them and finding out what it is that they need and making sure the library can be positioned to help them in meet some of their needs is something that I think is critically important. So those social relationships are often based upon me asking questions in the same sense that the reference interview is there. You know, what does success look like for you? Well, what do you need in order to help you to do that? Well, here's an area that we can do because we're used to finding information.
So when you're talking to someone and you find out their hot spots, like homelessness or teen learning or anti-gang or whatever their hot spot is that they want to make a difference in their lives on, one thing that I worry about as we're doing this kind of stuff is closing the loop. So it's one thing to listen. Active listening usually is about, like, what are your techniques for following up besides a thank you note, which I know everybody does. But
let's use the downtown homelessness one as an example, because, I mean, that loop is being closed right now in Hamilton. And I just had lunch with Paul Takala, the new CEO, last week, and he was telling me that loop was just closed, where we identified that we were having a huge problem, particularly during cold weather periods of time, with sometimes with the homeless population that would come in, and other people would view them as being a problem inside the library. So we talked to those the people that were inside the library to see what their needs were.
The actual homeless.
Yes. And we talked to other people within the community to see, well, what resources are actually available? Well, what issues are you having? We toured through some of the city social services staff through our library building, and they were able to say, oh, my word, that person's one of our clients. That person's one of our clients. Heck, half your clients are here during the daytime. So, you know, we wound up then with a task force that was dealing with these issues, trying to fill the holes of what that homeless population actually needed. And one of those loops that is just being closed is 40 hours a week of social work time that's being assigned and paid for by another agency that is actually housed inside the library to go up to people and make sure that their health needs are being addressed, their housing needs are being addressed. You know, many of those needs are being addressed. And then they know that person is their advocate inside the library itself.
That's very cool. So how do you tell that story and to whom?
Oh, the funny thing is that you do that enough times, I'm not even sure you have to tell your story that much. One of the things that made me very happy was that when One City Initiative was started, the city council's immediate reaction was, well, the library has to be involved. And that's because we were always involved in those large initiatives. So if you tell the story enough, if you have enough successes, then those various types of committees, those people are all saying that the library is engaged and part of that particular process. And then you start being invited to more and more tables. Sometimes if you're not being invited to the tables you think you should be sitting at, then you have to make sure that you're starting with small successes and delivering on the targets of what those groups are interested in, and you will be invited.
Now, that's really interesting because there's so many opportunities for libraries to make a difference with the foundations we have. You know, we've got the books, we've got the staff, we've got the technology, but building that trust with people. So suppose you got a critical event where 50% of your council and or your trustees turn over. What strategies do you undertake to reinvigorate those relationships or rebuild them?
I know that one thing I believe in is that when you're dealing with a budget in terms of council, that what you really don't want to do is start establishing that relationship 2 weeks before your budget's going to be heard. One thing we did in Hamilton, and they still do it there, is that in the fall, the board chair and I, and the two of us would go together, and I love having the citizen with me because it makes it, when the counselor knows it's a citizen that's sitting there and not a paid person who is an administrator, the whole tone of the meeting can change sometimes. So I would always take the board chair with me, and we'd sit down with each individual counselor, tell them what's going on inside their ward that we would view as being, you know, a good news type of a story, tell them the issues that we're facing, ask them about the types of issues that they're facing in their ward, not necessarily just library-related. And we have had the ones that came through like, oh, we have a real problem with teenagers after school, you know, that are vandalizing because there's not enough for them to do. And then we would sit there and say, you know what, we'll call together a meeting with Parks and Recreation, with the YMCA, with, you know, the Boys and Girls Clubs, with the Kiwanis, with the library, and we'll see what we can do in those types of areas. So, you know, even if the area isn't directly related to the library, we'll try to find out a way that we can help facilitate a solution for it. And then by the time the budget comes along, they're used to working with you one-on-one, and they cannot say enough good things about you. Now, we try to make sure, because you asked about board, we try to make sure there's a thorough board orientation at the very beginning, and I think most libraries do, and there's a lot of good material on how to make sure that the board is well-oriented.
So that all sounds procedural, and then there's the interpersonal dynamics of being an influencer. So we could be said, okay, you're self-interested at your job, or you've got this role or that role. How do you build relationships and trust besides just listening?
Delivering. And one of my truisms is that I believe councils give money to organizations and to individuals that they trust, and that they trust to deliver value for the money that they receive. So you need to deliver.
Mm-hmm. So What strategies do you use to prove and give evidence of delivery, on especially on soft topics like social engineering?
Well, I think you hit part of it, is that it comes down to the individual stories. It comes down to people showing that it has an impact. But it comes down a lot to visibility. I know when I first got to Hamilton, the signs on the building used to say the branch name and never even said Hamilton Public Library. And then when I would talk to influencers, decision-making, people within the community, they would all say, well, I don't mind if the Hamilton Public Library took a budget cut, but don't you dare cut the Westdale branch or this branch or that branch. You know, well, that is the Hamilton Public Library. So we made sure that we redid the sign so they said Hamilton Public Library and the branch name really small. That we did things such as we started doing all the programs in the local newspaper. We started doing a lot more radio so that everybody in the community is hearing what it is that you're doing. So the word library is on people's names. And I think that you have to make sure that you're taking your successes and pushing them so that, you know, when people love booking material and holds online, make sure you're going to deliver that service and do a good job of it, because then they'll be talking to their counselors and telling people how much they appreciate it. Make sure that your buildings look clean and nice. You know, you have to do the things that look like you're providing value.
So you've made part of your career, despite early successes in children's and teen librarianship, being a great technologist for libraries.
Yeah, I love technology.
Yeah, clearly. And so technologies move from being a technology transactional process for storage and retrieval to being very social and collaborative. Like we have some poor man is named Rob Ford in the UK and is undergoing a lot of abuse right now on his Twitter account. So we see that public conversations are happening within the social media sphere. Have you engaged your communities or used things like social media presence to push things into your community?
You know, not that much. I can't say that it's we certainly use the sort of social media as much as we can inside the library. But I have never quite figured out how to do that to the best advantage. I'd love to hear from, and I know there are, and I've listened and I've gone to some of the sessions. But I can't say that I've quite figured it out. You know,
it's an interesting challenge, because the public conversation, how do we get the value impact of libraries into the public conversation,
yes,
on a more extended level. But I'm hearing you that when you talk visibility, you didn't just mean the signage on your buildings, or your buildings having street presence.
No.
You also meant your staff being out there and being branded as Hamilton Public Library.
Yes, and we also mean that instead of just doing the glossy brochure or the brochure that you hand out to people that come into the library, because they already use you, that you're doing those types of a handout, maybe even as a paid ad in the newspaper if you have to get the presence. But you're making sure that that media comment about the library is out there as much as you possibly can. You know, do a column on what's new, on art, on books that are coming out. Do a column on how easy it is to do, downloads in some particular way, or new services that are coming out. You need to constantly remind the entire population of what it is that the library is doing, because the entire population pays for you. And even if they don't use you, they have to feel that the community is receiving value.
And so you've done a lot of partnerships that have changed the influence of Hamilton Public Library in your community. So beyond partnering with city departments, one example, that your main library branch has a farmer's market in it full time.
Yeah.
And the farmer's market is more successful because of the library, and the library is more successful because of the farmer's market. I love your aquarium that overlooks the fish hall.
yes, the fish that are lucky.
Yeah, the lucky fish, yeah. So
I like that too.
Talk a little bit about partners and influencing.
Oh, I think probably my favorite partnership of all time was the one that we did when we wanted fiber throughout the community, and we knew that we needed broader band to the library branches. but we also knew that it would be too expensive for us to put fiber into all those locations. So we partnered with the city, the university, Mohawk College, and the Catholic School Board and the Public School Board, and then worked through with the City Hydro and actually laid our own fiber all throughout the city. And it was fantastic. In fact, the director of both school boards have talked about it as one of the most successful partnerships that they've ever engaged in. And that led subsequently to sort of signed partnership agreements with both school boards that where they printed the material out for summer reading program and distributed it, and they made sure that the principals at the board level and at the senior administrator level in the school gave the library permission to go into each school and to talk to the different classrooms. Before that, you had to kind of negotiate it with every individual principal. But afterwards, when it became a board-to-board partnership agreement, then it just streamlined the entire process.
And that's interesting because it sounds like a big city strategy, but I've also seen, you know, Donna Byrne Tyson helped lead an activity up in the North Bay region in a bunch of small libraries to make sure that broadband came to parts of the communities that were underserved by connectivity. And broadband is the roads and railways of the 1800s. Broadband is the 21st century economic context.
Yeah.
And talking about libraries in an economic context rather than a books context, is that a theme?
Yeah, I think it is. And in fact, I'm driving from one location to another, and it is in a smaller Ontario community where that's one of the issues they're looking at is partnerships for broadband.
So when you went through your megacity merger, like Toronto and Ottawa and I think Windsor went through, the dynamics of your job changed. You had an urban library that became largely rural and small town.
Yeah.
How did that change your behaviors as a CEO or CIO?
Oh, I mean, other than the fact that it aged us all, for me, it was fantastic. I loved it because it allowed us to take what really was a 150-year-old library system with the attendant sort of layers of bureaucracy that were attached to that and to sort of say, well, it's all new. It's all brand new. We get to start all over again. And we did. Because we're able to create it from scratch. And I think one of the reasons that Hamilton has been a successful library over the past 10 years is that it's a flexible library system, even though it's an older city and you would think of as usually having that older bureaucracy. So we took it all apart. We took everything apart. It's a complex answer, you know. But we just rethought the entire library system from start to from top to bottom. But we worked a lot with our union, and we showed them what we thought was going to be happening into the future in terms of libraries, and we were right. And we started changing jobs, and we started doing it increasingly with their permission. So what we did is we said a five-year plan is that we're going to pay for the tuition, offer people the ability to retrain themselves, because our expectation is there's going to be less need for this type of a position and more need for this one. And as a result, we gained an ability to change positions considerably. And an example is that the library system at the time of amalgamation, when we looked at all of the systems that came through, had 40 positions that required just high school. And the library system at the present time has 4, and that's it. But we gained many more jobs that required several years post-secondary, but we also provided staff with the means of acquiring that.
So when Hamilton expanded and got all, like, you know, that the mega city or whatever you called it, got opinion leaders and former community leaders that ran their own show in smaller towns and counties around you,
yep.
Did you find that the same techniques work with them around listening and engaging, or did you have to drive farther? Is it more face-to-face? Because you've got a different kind of opinion leader that you need to influence for a branch that's 60 miles from downtown Hamilton?
And there was more face-to-face, and there was more sort of doubt because lots of people from the smaller communities that were being brought into Hamilton